And welcome back, guys. It's another installment of The Two Brandons. This is Brandon Thomas.
And this is Brandon Easton.
And we are back to give you a big year-ender for 2014. We have a couple of really cool topics on tap. We're going to begin our discussion talking about the recent mid-season finales of CW shows The Flash and Arrow. Little back and forth about how we think both of those seasons are going in our opinion, and we'll conclude with probably the bulk of our chat about Star Wars The Force Awakens and the recent teaser trailer that was served up and some of the reaction that people have had to it, and you know, probably a little speculation about what it all may mean. So before we get too far into it, I just want to throw over to my man, Mr. Brandon Easton, with a public service announcement.
Yes, today's episode, if you're going to have children around or if you're going to do this at work without headphones, you might want to put on headphones and get the kids out of the room, because there might be some cursing today, because I have a lot to say about the level of whining and nitpicking in regards to Arrow, The Flash, and Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. So with that being said, do you have anything else to say, Brandon, before I jump into this?
No, it's all you. Get it going.
All right. Now, I've said this many times over the last, I'd say, 3 to 4 years. I didn't realize how bad I personally was as a fanboy, and I'll be the first one to admit that I used to be very much one of the worst fanboys, most whining and bitching and complaining human beings about Transformers and Voltron and Robotech, anything with giant robots in it. I'd bitch and complain endlessly about Star Trek and Star Wars. And then slowly but surely, I realized that putting all that negativity into the cyberspace and into the world in general, it achieved nothing. I have no contact, generally speaking, with the people that run those shows. I have no contact with the writers or the development executives or the people that greenlight a show financially so it can actually be on the air. I mean, these are the people who you would have to actually bitch and complain to if you want to see changes. And I'd say less than 0.00001% of the fan population has access to those people. So with that said, I'd say just please shut the fuck up sometimes. Please. I'll give you an example. Now, over the last, I guess, since The Flash debuted, and to a lesser extent, since Arrow debuted a couple of years, a few years back, you know, people have been like nitpicking about Arrow and The Flash, and this year The Flash, and they've been nitpicking about shit that's just not really that important. I mean, literally, it's not that fucking important. You know, we have two shows right now that are top quality superhero science fiction action adventure series that are taken seriously with excellent writing, excellent acting, and a well-constructed story arc that's about, you know, planned way in advance, because you can tell. And as a fact, I know people, because I actually work in Hollywood, I work in the industry, I know people on both Arrow and The Flash, and I know for a fact, and I'm not bragging, this is just a statement of fact, I know for a fact that they have a big grand arc plan for both shows. All we have to do is sit back and enjoy that. That's it. It doesn't cost us anything other than our cable bill. And if you don't have cable, you can watch this stuff online, generally for free. You're not paying for this. You're not a stockholder in Warner Brothers or Berlanti Productions. You're not clothing or housing the writers and executives on this show. So what the fuck are you all complaining about? This is not everybody. This is just like that core group. Like, over the last couple of days, like, people have been complaining, and we're going to get into spoilers. So if you haven't watched the last, I'd say, 4 weeks of Arrow or The Flash, I mean, literally, you probably don't want to listen any further.
No.
Unless you want to be spoiled, because we're going to get into everything that's happened up until the last week of episodes. So, spoiler warning, spoiler alert. Tom?
Okay.
Space, and there we go. All right, now, we all know that Arrow, based on how it was developed, is a show that basically replaces Bruce Wayne in the Nolanverse with Oliver Queen. Clearly, this is not the Oliver Queen that we all know from the old days. This is not the boxing glove arrow joking liberal, you know, hippy dippy guy. This is not that Oliver Queen. This is what if Christopher Nolan basically created Oliver Queen. It has worked. Clearly, we've substituted Bruce Wayne for Oliver Queen. We know this already. This is kind of common sense. It's clear. Okay? To constantly bitch about how this feels like Batman, or Batman this, or, you know, Bruce would have gave Ra's al Ghul a better fight. It's like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? We had, this last week, one of the finest battles I've ever seen on American television. Well choreographed, well timed, with Stephen Amell doing his own stunts, doing his own sword play. And I don't know the guy, I forgot the guy who plays Ra's al Ghul.
The guy, but Matt Nable is his name?
Yeah, something like that. You know, they did a fantastic job. It was not the typical crazy American action scene when you have people bouncing off walls. You had a scene that was straight up realistic sword play and martial arts. How it would actually go if you took two guys of that skill level. Obviously, Oliver Queen should not win that fight. Bruce Wayne even should not win that fight. It's only the bat fetishists that think Bruce Wayne can beat Jesus Christ who actually are making a big deal. Like somebody posted on my thing on my Facebook, well, you know, Oliver barely gave him a fight. I'm like, what the fuck? It's Ra's al Ghul. No one other than maybe, you know, Superman, you know, could probably not sweat, but any human being is going up against a guy who's Lazarus Pit enhanced. It's like the Murakami fighters, basically, except on an even harsher level, because Ra's al Ghul has hundreds of years of fighting experience. The fact that Ali hung with him for more than 5 minutes is a testament to how badass Oliver was. But the idea that people actually are complaining that he didn't hang with Ra's al Ghul as long as Bruce would have, as if, you know, Bruce Wayne was a real guy who would actually fight a real guy named Ra's, you know. I mean, it's getting to the point. This is not Mayweather and Pacquiao. You know, these are comic book characters brought to life, you know? And it's been brought to life fantastically. And this fucking millennial, I don't know if it's a millennial entitlement, because it's not even millennials. It's guys in their 40s and 50s bitching and complaining about what Arrow isn't doing for them, or what the Flash isn't doing for them. How about this? Let's not have a fucking Arrow or Flash show at all. Would you guys be happy then? You know? I mean, I am so fucking tired of this whining and complaining in the fan base. All these fucking geeks who have never created and have no ability to create a goddamn thing. All they do is whine and complain. Whine and complain. If you don't like the show, don't fucking watch it. How about that? You know there's this thing called a remote. Just turn the fucking channel. Watch Family Feud. Watch Jeopardy. You know, there's other shit on during the time when Arrow and the Flash is on, you know. There's like, what, 600, 700 channels now?
Man, I thought it's the only show that's on at that time.
Apparently it is, because these people are being chained to a fucking chair with titanium chains and their eyes pried open like a clockwork orange, and they're forced to watch Arrow and the Flash. You know, that's the way they, because the way you see them talk about it, as if though it's a chore. Guess what, guys? Don't watch it. That's all you got to do is not watch it. And guess what? You don't have to worry about Bruce Wayne beating Ra's al Ghul quicker than Oliver. You don't have to worry about Lazarus Pitt. You don't have to worry about Flash, Team Flash, because people are complaining about how they changed the Flash verse because now he has a team like Arrow. Guess what? Very few people on Earth read the Flash comic book. I hate to break this to you guys. Very few people know the difference between Wally West, Bart Allen, or Barry Allen. Very few people know who the fuck Reverse Flash or Professor Zoom is. Or Miriam. You know, very few people know.
Captain Cole.
People watched that episode of The Flash with Captain Cole because it was Wentworth fucking Miller.
Right.
And nobody gives a fuck about Captain Cole. The only people who know about Captain Cole is motherfuckers like us who grew up watching the Super Challenge of the Super Friends cartoon from the 70s when they would fight the Legion of Doom and he wore a goddamn hoodie, a parka with like fur around the edges, and he had a gun and he made a bunch of bad jokes about, you know, ice. You know, it's just like, that's who Captain Cole is to us. The fact that we got one of the coolest young American actors, a biracial brother at that, playing Captain Cole should be something to be celebrated. It's like, wow, we got, you know, a mixed race brother who does not hide the fact that he has black blood, you know, who's, I think he's coming out the closet at some point. I think he already, I don't know if he did or not, but he's out there doing his job, and he did a fantastic job as Captain. He made Captain Cold seem cool, no pun intended, you know? And I just wish there was a little bit more appreciation from the fan base who, that's not even the fan base, because fans are loving the show. It's the whiny, bitchy, nitpicking fanboy geek types that just keep bitching and complaining about stuff. And I'm sorry for cursing so much, but I had to let it out because, you know, I'm trying not to curse on Facebook anymore. I'm trying not to be negative on Facebook, you know, because it's just not, it's not a good look. But, you know, I can't abide this. Like, I'm sitting there watching Arrow and the Flash, and I'm thinking, good Lord, we've got movie quality TV shows every week for free. Every week.
Dude, seriously. I continue, you know, I'm sorry to break in, but
no, go ahead.
Am amazed at how cool the effects for the Flash actually are. I'm like, wow. Like,
right. I mean, did you see that reverse Flash, like, race scene? That was some shit from the comic books. Like, it looked like I was reading the comic on a television screen.
I'm like, man, even 5 years ago, they wouldn't have been able to do effects like this. And, you know, just interjecting into what you're saying, you know, me and Easton have a lot of, we have a lot of conversations in private. And I know, I know that the last few weeks, we have basically been kind of like sending these, you know, texts and Facebook messages back and forth, trying to figure out what the fuck is wrong with everybody. It's like, what needs to happen in these things for people to actually just watch them, enjoy them, and talk about it with other people that enjoy them too. Not having to always engage in some kind of, you know, who wins, you know, narrative. Everything is turned into who wins. It's like, I mean, personally, I feel exactly the same way. I feel just as strongly with, you know, just as much profanity as you used. And I mean, it's upsetting to me, even though I know that it shouldn't be. You know, it's upsetting to me that for a lot of people, there is just nothing that can be done. I mean, and I watch these people complain, and it just makes me sad. It's like, what must these people's lives be like off of the internet? You know, I mean, life, it's like, life is hard. Life is difficult a lot of the time, and you just encounter these people that they just, it is impossible for them to enjoy anything. It is impossible for them to appreciate anything. And this is not a strictly, you know, I know this isn't a strictly, you know, geek phenomenon, but I know that we tend to care about the little kind of unimportant details about this shit a lot more than, you know, your typical average viewer who, like you said, they don't know who the fuck Captain Cold is. They don't know what a Wally West or you know, Professor Zoom or any of this stuff. I mean, they used fucking Rainbow Raider in the Flash Arrow crossover. I mean, there's just I'll start with Arrow first, all right, before I, you know, get too far gone.
Go for it.
Seriously, I thought that was the climb, I thought, was one of the best episodes that Arrow has done. I think that if you kind of, that's an episode that you can kind of show to somebody and say, okay, this is what Arrow is. You know, we have some family drama, we have a little Team Arrow drama, we have a little, you know, romance, and we have, you know, some kick-ass action sequences and a couple of cool surprises. Definitely the Oliver Raish fight, and I'm sorry, I will continue to call the character Ra's al Ghul and not Ra's al Ghul like they the Dark Knight trilogy, just because, you know, I am honoring Batman the Animated Series by calling him Ra's al Ghul. And I think it sounds better anyway. But I thought that it was a great fight. I mean, clearly that was a moment from Batman that they directly transferred into the Arrow universe.
Neil Adams, baby.
And this whole, like, oh, well, you know, it's just Batman. It's like, well, look, you know, Batman's never going to have a show like this on TV.
Nope.
And if you want to get really technical about it, a lot of these superhero origin stories are very, very similar. You know, Oliver Queen's, you know, being marooned on an island for 5 years. I mean, is that really so different from, you know, Bruce Wayne traveling the world and gathering up all of these skills and then coming back and saving? I mean, the stories are very, very similar. And it doesn't, given the current success of Chris Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy when they developed Arrow, it only makes sense that they would, you know, borrow as many aspects of something that people already like to create, you know, something slightly different. I mean, is this version of Oliver Queen, is it the same version of him that there's been in the comic books? No, but, you know, again, like you said, nobody reads fucking Green Arrow comics. I mean, people, people that actually read and like comics don't read Green Arrow comics. I mean, Green Arrow and The Flash, these are very kind of like inside baseball type of characters. You know, this isn't like Spider-Man or Batman or, you know, a character that someone that has no connection to comics still has a halfway decent understanding of the character and their history because of, you know, animated series or movies or whatever. It's like, this is not that.
Right.
They made the choices they made because of what was popular at the time. And they've added enough to it that it makes it a lot different. Well, I don't know if it makes it a lot different, but it makes it different from Batman. You know, Oliver Queen is not, he's not supposed to be Bruce Wayne, but they have access to some of those characters and some of that mythology. And when you put it together, it all works. I mean, it doesn't defy, you know, I don't think it breaks the show, the fact that they wanted to do some, you know, League of Assassins stuff. And they didn't just, you know, plagiarize Batman stories. You know, they added shit to it. You know, Nissa Al Ghul is not in the comics. I mean, I don't think, maybe she is. I mean, I guess.
No, she is.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, fine. You know, she is from the comics, but, you know, their new interpretation of Black Canary, or I guess she was only Canary at the time, you know, they are adding things, you know, to the myth. It's not like they're just, you know, taking shit from Batman and putting Oliver Queen in it. I mean, the show is just, it is what it is. I see a lot of people complaining about how, you know, they're irritated that, like, everyone is so pretty. Yeah, and, you know, and again, which is, again, is kind of like a complaint that I don't understand and think is, you know, is pretty kind of fucking dumb and short-sighted. You know, I compare it to this, right? We read a lot of comics. Now, every single comic that we read does not have the perfect writer and artist creative team, right? There are some books that you know that you're reading where you love the writing and you kind of wish that maybe they had a different sort of artist. Not that the art is bad, but just that there may be another artist out there that is better suited to tell this writer's stories. You know, that's kind of what I compare it to. You know, yes, most of the actors that are cast on these CW shows are, you know, attractive, fit people. But again, that doesn't override the actual story. That doesn't override the actual character arcs. And, you know, there's a lot of, for a lot of, you know, complaining about these little kind of unimportant details, not enough attention is being paid to the fact that both of these shows have fully realized real female characters, real minority characters. I mean, yes, everybody on these shows is, you know, is attractive and fit, but they're not all, you know, straight white dudes. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of color in this Arrow Flash universe. And I'll tell you, you know, I'll tell you one thing, man. That scene between Joe West and Barry Allen in the final arc of, you know, the man in the yellow suit, I think was one of the dopest, like, most kind of, you know, heartfelt, real scenes that they have done. And I'll tell you what, any show that will write a scene like that between, you know, a black man and his surrogate white son and the obvious love and affection and care that they both have for each other, any show that features a scene like that, I'm going to watch, and I don't give a fuck what anybody else says about it. And I don't give a fuck about anybody's, you know, inside baseball complaints about, you know, they changed things from the comics and this is different. And, you know, he's not really Barry Allen. He's really Wally. That shit doesn't matter. That shit doesn't matter. At the end of the day, I think it's good. I respect and appreciate the work that they're doing. And I think that both of these shows are so much better than they have, you know, any right to be, and are so much better than I think anybody expected them to be. And, you know, that's it.
Well, to add to that, because you've said it all, brother, I mean, you said it all, and adding Jesse L. Martin to that show.
I love Jesse Martin.
Adding him to this was a stroke of genius. I mean, the brother is absolutely astounding. I mean, I've had my eye on him since he did Rent way back in the day on Broadway. Mm-hmm. He can sing. He can act. He brings an emotional gravitas and just acting chops to a show that definitely needed it, because you had so many young people, with the exception of the guy who plays Professor Harrison is his name?
Harrison Wells.
Yeah, Professor Wells. Other than that guy can act, too. He was on a show called Ed a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in terms of having an emotional core, you know, having Martin on there was just a stroke of genius. I mean, he brings everything to every episode. He is not cowardly. He reminds me a lot of a more fleshed out John Diggle in a way. And I like that. You know, I like Barry and Joe West's relationship. You know, it's built very well. It's not hokey. It's not superficial. It's not forced down our throats. It's a great setting. It's a great emotional setup for Barry Allen, no matter which way the show goes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, first of all, I was one of the people back in 1990 or 91, I think, that saw the original Flash show the first time it ever came on CBS. Mm-hmm. And I was so disgusted by how horrible that show was. Now, I'm not the biggest Flash fan in the world. I'll tell you that.
I'm not either.
The Flash that I kind of grew to like a lot, believe it or not, was Mark Waid's run with Wally West, even before the Justice League animated series came on. I really enjoyed what Mark Waid did, because he brought a kind of accessibility to the Flash that the Barry Allen version never had, because the old Barry Allen Flash had to be, to me, the most boring character in the history of superhero comics, in my opinion. I know a lot of old school conservative fanboy types are probably going to hate me for saying that, because Barry Allen is like this sacrosanct figure amongst the 55 and up age group. But I'm sorry, Barry is extremely boring. He never had an adventure that I cared about. His rogues gallery was generally the dumbest rogues gallery in the history of comics. They were not fun to watch. I mean, I used to read the Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams, Green Arrow and Green Lantern stories way back when. I used to read the reprints. And I even felt that version of Oliver Queen was 10,000 times better than the 70s and 60s version of Barry Allen. I don't know what attracted anybody to Barry Allen, because the old Flash costume looks really stupid the way it was drawn. I do think the idea of a suit popping out of a ring is dumb, but even when I was a kid, I thought that was stupid, because I always liked the fact that Peter Parker had to go somewhere and change. Right. You know, I thought that was the coolest thing ever. But, you know, I'm not going to be negative. I'm just going to say that this show made me a bigger fan of The Flash than I ever thought it would be possible. You know, and I think that there's some areas for it to grow, clearly.
Obviously.
You know, I think that the female character at Star Labs, she needs to grow a little bit. She's been kind of boring. Cisco is fun, but he needs to calm down a little bit. In fact, I like how the Flash Arrow crossover showed the strengths and weaknesses of both sides when they go to the other show.
Right.
You know, whereas the Arrow crew is a little bit too violent, the Flash crew is a little bit too naive. Mm-hmm. And I think that was brilliant.
Yeah, it was great.
You know,
it was great, because the Arrow crew is, you know, they live in a different city. Absolutely. And they're several years into this, and their kind of partnership and relationship has been kind of colored by all of these, you know,
horrible things.
Yes, horror. This series of unfortunate events that they've all respectively lived through and lived through together. And the Flash crew doesn't have that quite yet. So, I mean, I hope that this is, you know, I hope that this is something that they try to do every year. You know, I hope that every year there's another, you know, crossover between the two groups, and we can kind of see how all of the characters are developing and growing, you know, right, separately, and then put them all in a room together, and you can really see the stark differences.
And that's something to look forward to. In fact, what I'm really looking forward to is the middle of January when both shows come back, because, you know, I'll say this too, speaking of the Reverse Flash episode, you know, that concept of Professor Zoom or Reverse Flash or whatever they're going to call him eventually, that's something that's mired in years of twisted and weird continuity. It's something that was never fun to try to unravel or figure out.
Yeah.
I do believe, and some people disagree with me, I do believe that the Flashpoint comic book and animated movie did an excellent job of showing how lethal Reverse Flash is. And I'm very glad that the creators of the show, well, obviously Geoff Johns is a major consultant on the Flash especially. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to see that they kind of dropped in the Flashpoint version of Reverse Flash. And if, for those who don't know, Flashpoint was the Flash-centered event in DC Comics that basically created the New 52 universe. It was a splinter moment where Barry Allen went back in time to stop his mother's death, and by doing so, he radically altered the future of the DC universe forever. But although it seems like they're going to reverse that real soon, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. But the Flashpoint comic, to me, wasn't as good as the Flashpoint animated movie that, you know, Warner Brothers Animation did. And it was a very lethal, dynamic, and extremely intelligent and devious Reverse Flash who was able to alter the entire universe. And that looks like the Reverse Flash we're getting on the show. And the fact that they made him so tangible and so deadly without making him look stupid, that is an achievement within itself.
Yes.
Because Reverse Flash with a yellow costume could look real dumb in live action, but they did something really cool. They only had the top of the suit be yellow and the rest of it fade into black. Mm-hmm. And I think that as a design cue visually was a genius move.
Yeah. And the blur effect they gave him was really cool too, because it just shows you that, you know, he is moving so much faster than even the Flash is moving that you can't really, you can never really fully focus on the Reverse Flash, because he is always, and his molecules are always in motion. Yeah. Even when it looks like he's standing still,
right, because he never actually is. And, well, we could get into the whole DC Universe explanation for that, but it's because he might be existing in more than one universe at once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something they kind of, you know, hint at a lot, that Reverse Flash is, you know, in the Speed Force and not in the Speed Force at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of like on that episode when Wally West ran so fast he circled the globe to knock out the Luthor Brainiac combination on Justice League animated series, where he became a part of the Speed Force and neither existed here or there. It looks like Reverse Flash is just like that on the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait till they get to the Speed Force.
I had let a bunch of Flash episodes stack up on the DVR, and then I watched, you know, a bunch of them in preparation for the Flash Arrow crossover, because I wanted to try to watch that live, because I knew everybody was going to be talking about it.
Yeah, so, they would ruin it online, absolutely.
Yeah, so I had an incentive to catch up, and I was really just, I was really surprised at how much I enjoyed it, because just like you said, I don't have a very strong emotional attachment to the Flash. There are a couple of runs that I think are very good. Like you said, the Mark Waid run, especially once Mike Waringo joined
him.
Rest in peace, Mike. And I also enjoyed Geoff Johns' run for the most part, especially like the meat of it, like the Scott Collins meat of it. I thought he did a very good job on that run. But other than that, I mean, I'm not a huge, like, I'm not always buying like the Flash comic books, you know. It's very dependent on who's actually working on it. So I was very surprised to find out that I was enjoying the show as much as I was. And I mean, again, just like with Arrow, you know, it is kind of Wally West's personality with Barry Allen's name and job and history. But, pretty, you know, it's kind of one of those things where that's just, you know, Barry Allen is the Flash in the current DC comic books. And I know there are certain things that they want to keep consistent. And if you started having Wally West be the Flash, then half of these old nerds are going to be saying, well, what happened to Barry? Why isn't Barry such and such? So, I mean, I understand why they chose to just have him be Barry Allen. Barry Allen also has like an interesting job that kind of works with the procedural nature of the show, where he's a, you know, crime scene investigator. So yeah. I understand that, but I was very happy to see that they've kind of injected some of kind of like the humor and charm that was more kind of like the staple of Wally West into this version of Barry Allen. And I think, I mean, I really like the way the show is laid out. I really like the cool, you know, stinger scenes that they have at the end of every episode.
Yep.
And I mean, I just, and to me, it just, all of that culminated into that scene with Barry and Joe West in the lab, which was like, whoa, like, man, like, emotions, like, on the Flash, like, what happened?
Exactly.
And, I mean, I just think that they're doing a really good job. I mean, I think the effects for a TV show are, you know, are pretty damn incredible overall.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Absolutely. Even though I wasn't a super fan, I might have seen a couple of episodes of the original Flash show, I think that it is super cool that they are finding ways to incorporate those actors into this version of Flash. I mean, I think it's awesome that the guy that played the Flash in the old TV show
is
Barry's dad, and that they're bringing back, you know, Mark Hamill's character. Woo! You know, I know, right? don't get me started about Mark Hamill. It's too soon. But I just think that they're doing, you know, a phenomenal job with both shows. And I think that the lessons that they learned from Arrow have led The Flash to being a much stronger show out of the gate. Like, I enjoyed Arrow from, you know, pretty much season one, but I know a lot of people thought that season one was kind of homework before you could get to the really cool shit in season two. And I think that they've taken a lot of the lessons that they learned there and put them into practice on The Flash, which has allowed it to, you know, get started a lot faster out of the gate and really kind of find its rhythm and balance a lot earlier than even Arrow did. And I mean, I hope that the crossover thing is going to be a yearly thing. And here's the big thing I want to see. I want to see some kind of time travel event in The Flash that changes the world of Arrow during their respective crossover. So I would be passing out if they ever get to that point. But I mean, I think that they're both doing a great job. I like the fact that you can tell that these shows are written by people that know and love the original comics. You can tell. And you can tell when you contrast a show like Arrow or The Flash versus that fucking awful Gotham show on Fox, it just feels like it's just written by people that basically saw like Nolan's trilogy and that's it. And they read like Year One and that's like their only interpretation of Batman. But I don't want to get into that because then, you know, I'll really start getting upset. And we're going to keep it positive because, you know, I think that we're lucky. I think we're lucky. I think we're fortunate to have, you know, two shows like this be on at the same time. They're both in a shared universe. They're both sharing creative resources and writers and producers. And I think it's a really cool thing to see. And, you know, I wish them the best as they, you know, finish out their respective seasons and into the future, because I think they're doing a great job, and I really think that they're creating a blueprint on how to do a comics-based show that, you know, kind of that honors the original source material, but updates it in a way where, you know, a mainstream audience can easily plug into it and be like, oh, okay, you know, this is cool, I like this. Because, you know, comics is fucking complicated. So, I mean, on the yep. first order of business for, I'm sure, both of these shows were condensing things and making things a lot more simpler and concise. And I think that they've done a great job. I thought the finales for both were excellent. I'm really anxious to see the Arrow stuff. You know, their interpretation of the Lazarus Pit, which is probably where we're heading. That isn't, you know, hasn't been 100% confirmed, but you know, it's a pretty right. safe bet that that's where they're headed. And you know, that version. Last thing I'm gonna say about that Arrow shit. That version of Oliver Queen lasted as long against Ra's al Ghul as he was supposed to. Now, maybe Absolutely. In season 6, you know, if they fight again, season 5 or 6, Ali may last a little longer. But,
exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Ra's al Ghul is basically like, you know, the ultimate immortal badass. And, you know, Batman has trouble beating Ra's al Ghul, or Batman has trouble staying alive
exactly.
versus, you know, Ra's al Ghul in a head up, you know, hand to hand. But, you know, that shit doesn't matter. I thought that shit was excellent.
You know who also gave Batman trouble was Wildcat.
Yes.
Because Wildcat wrapped the cape around Bruce, you know, Batman, and like kept punching him. And I'm like, why doesn't everybody do that? You know, but you know what else was cool about The Flash and is kind of kept on a DL a little bit is the fact that we have a live action version of Firestorm that doesn't look stupid.
Yes.
Because Firestorm in the comic, I think, is one of the dumbest looking designs of a hero I've ever seen in my life. I've never liked Firestorm. I think that the guy that has like a chamber pot on his head that flames come out of, I always thought that was dumb. I'm like, what is this supposed to, like who designed this? Like, I mean, you couldn't have been like sober and designed a guy. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't know. But the fact that they made him look like the Human Torch, but not stupid, is amazing on a television budget.
Yep. On a television budget.
With that said, you know, I'm very happy with The Flash. I'm very happy with Arrow. And I'm very happy to see where all of this goes. And to close it off, I want to say, I think one of the coolest moments in this season of Arrow that no one really talked about is when they all showed up at Diggle's house real late at night to have dinner.
Awesome.
Because they had no place else to go.
Yep.
You know, that was cool.
Subtle.
Very subtle. You know, Roy and Oliver just, they need, the only human real anchor they have in the real world is Diggle.
Yep.
And that's kind of like, because now that, what's her name, Thea has become like, you know, Malcolm Merlin Jr. You know,
that was a cool last scene too.
Wasn't it, right?
Which played into, that's basically, if I, you know, we talked about this before, but to me, like, the first, like, kind of 100% great, no holds barred, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The first great scene in Arrow was when he confronted his mother. Like, that was one of my
right.
favorite scenes
you have failed
from
this
season one. And this was really kind of like a fucked up echo of that, too. Because he came in and he's, you know, doing his big Arrow thing. And then Thea starts trying to whoop his ass.
And then,
like,
she jumps off, the balcony.
I love his face.
That was awesome.
What the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, so Diggle is the only real regular person that he actually has left in his life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, Ray Palmer, is, you know, Superman, as I call him, showed up. And, you know, and I'm going to say something. I love Brandon Routh a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But is it me, or does, when I hear him talk and see him, does he not look like a clone of Christopher Reeve? He sounds like Christopher Reeve when he talks.
Yeah, he looks... I mean, I thought that that was something that he was doing just for Superman Returns, but...
That's how he talks!
Yeah, I mean, the way his voice and his mannerisms, they're very, very similar.
And it's... It kind of creeps me out because I'm watching Brandon Routh, but when he talks, I hear Christopher Reeve.
And playing the Atom.
I swear to God, it's so weird to me, man. A lot of people don't know I was a huge fan of the original Superman movies, and I'm a huge fan of Christopher Reeve as an actor outside of that, because he did a lot of other stuff, you know.
Yep.
You know, a lot, you know. So I was always a fan of him, but Christopher Reeve's voice always sounded the same, you know, no matter what he did. And Brandon Routh talks, and I'm like, is Christopher Reeve reincarnated in this young man? Like, it's creepy.
It's really a little weird. Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see it. It's like, wow, that's
yeah. That's so and he's doing a fantastic job as Ray Palmer, because this guy is heartfelt. He's not overacting. He's not underacting. He's hitting pitch perfect moments in his character, and I think that's awesome.
Yep.
You know, so we got Firestorm. We've got, you know, the Atom showing up. We've got the new Black Canary. We've got Wildcat in the background training Black Canary. We've got, you know, Arsenal or Roy Harper. I mean, this is shaping up to be a really cool thing.
Yeah, really cool thing.
Yeah. So with that said,
oh, here we go.
Star Wars Episode 7: The Force Awakens.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Is there a way we could put some Star Wars music under this?
I'll try to find some. you know, Disney will be yanking us down. I think there's like a four or five second rule or something. You can use like 4 seconds of something without paying for it. So I don't know, but
we're not selling this podcast. So
that's true.
We could just have the music playing underneath us.
And yeah, maybe.
So hopefully, when you're hearing this, you might be hearing some really cool Star Wars music underneath us. Hope. But I'll tell you, first of all, I woke up that morning at about 7:15 a.m., that Friday morning, and I had been writing all night long. I was burnt out, but I said, you know what? There's no way on earth I'm going to let this time go past without me having that in my life. Mm. And the first image you see is of the brother, John Boyega, popping into frame. And that blew my mind.
I'm done with you, JJ.
And I tell you, bro, just to see those X-Wings skirting across the surface of a lake, the new X-Wing fighters, if you look at them closely, the wing design is different.
Yep.
It's awesome. To see a cross-hilt lightsaber, to see Daisy Ridley, you know, who may or may not be the daughter of Han and Leia, to see the Millennium Falcon twirl over the sands of Tatooine or whatever desert planet they're on. I mean, what the fuck are people whining about now?
Oh,
I mean,
man.
People were complaining about that. And I'm not even going to get into the racial shit about John Boyega. I'm just going to talk about the fact that people were complaining that it was too short. I'm like, what the fuck do you think a teaser is?
Right.
This is called a teaser.
This is what I said. Probably that whole day. I feel like I spent most of that day arguing with people and posting sarcastic shit on Facebook. Right. I love how everybody gets up that morning, right, and they pretend that they don't know what the fuck a teaser trailer is. Like, this is the first teaser trailer anybody has ever seen before. It's like, does anybody remember the teaser trailer from The Dark Knight Rises from a couple of years ago that was like Jim Gordon in the hospital bed talking, you know, to Bruce Wayne, who you didn't even see in the fucking panel? And they had a dude crawling up the side of the wall in the prison pit, and they had a tiny, tiny glimpse of footage of Batman getting his ass kicked by Bane. And I just love how, you know, people act like they don't know what teaser trailers are anymore. Now it's like, oh man, it was only 88 seconds. It's like, first of all, the movie comes out in a fucking year. This is probably all of the shit that they even had done.
Exactly.
And, you know, and they talked about this a little while after. They're like, J.J. Abrams didn't even want to do a teaser trailer yet. But Disney was like, no, we got to give him something. So he's like, all right, well, here y'all can have 88 seconds. Leave me alone. I'm trying to finish this film and make it good. You know, I don't have time, you know, to craft some 3-minute long trailer in a year before the fucking thing comes out. So I just, again, this is, I mean, seriously, no one thought that there was ever going to be another Star Wars movie that continued the story of the characters from the original trilogy. Even after they had done the prequels, no one thought, oh man, I can't wait until they get done with these fucking prequels so then they can continue the story. Right. It's like nobody thought that. And if anybody says they thought that, they fucking lying. Nobody thought that. So we have something coming that we never even knew to expect. And all some people can do is complain about it. I mean, it's just, it's the saddest shit. And, you know, and I know, yeah, I've talked about this a lot, about like what Star Wars kind of means to me personally. And I know that I'm a little more connected and I'm a little more plugged in to some of this than, you know, than some other people are, right? But, I mean, I still couldn't believe it. I saw the trailer and I watched it like, you know, like four or five times, like right in that first sitting. Mm-hmm. And there was still a part of me that just didn't even believe what the fuck I was seeing. Like, this is another one? Wait, and there's a brother in, the brother's the first thing you see.
Yep.
In the whole, and I just, and I love, and I don't know if it was J.J. Abrams, I don't know if it was Disney, but I just love how those motherfuckers just shove their thumb into everybody's eye with that shit. And if you think for a second that that was an accident, you're a fool.
Right, right.
They knew exactly what they were doing, and they wanted to let people know from Jump Street, like, you better get used to it. Because Boyega going to be here. You're going to be looking at this brother for like 10 years. So
exactly.
You better get used to it. And I just love how he just threw everybody in the pool. And there wasn't, you know, this weird, there wasn't kind of like this kind of like luxurious, dramatic start. It's just kind of like, they show you a desert, you know, you hear the voiceover and a brother's head pops up on the screen. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, I mean, I love seeing it. I mean, I'm still watching, like, every few days, like, a few days will go by, and I'll be like, oh, shit, man, I haven't seen the Force Awakens trailer in, like, a few days. Let me go fix
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Exactly, man.
I mean, and I love the fact, you know, and this is kind of one of those things where I want them to withhold as much information as possible, as much shit is, you know, as they allow JJ to hold back from people, you know, I mean, to me, I don't even need to see another trailer, to be honest. I mean, and these people that pretend that, like, oh, I need to see more before, you know, get the fuck out of here with that bullshit. Okay, let me tell you something else that, you know, that drives me insane watching people talk about this. All of these people that say, well, you know, after the prequels, it's like, look, dude, the prequels are not being made, you know, these movies are not being made by the same people that made the prequels. There are different directors, there are different writers, there are different producers, there's a different cast. There's a different setting. It's like everything is fucking different except for the fact that it says Star Wars on the front. And it just drives me insane to watch people try to use this as some kind of like lofty justification for like why they're like, oh, well, I'm not into it because of the prequels. It's like, come on, man.
Wait a minute. Somebody actually said that?
Man, I saw a couple of people saying that shit. Saying like, oh man, I've been burned by the prequels, but maybe now. And it's like, you know what the fuck that sounds like when people say like dumb shit like that? That's like people saying, okay, you know, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are doing the Batman book, right? That's like saying, you know, if you hate that run, which I don't, I think it's one of the, you know, the best things going in comics right now. That's like them leaving the book completely, a completely different fucking creative team coming on the book, DC telling people, hey man, this shit is different. There's different people on it. and then people turning around and saying, I don't want to read this because I didn't like Scott Snyder's run. It's like, exactly. You know how fucking stupid you sound when you say that.
And they do sound like that because they don't pay attention to any goddamn thing. For example, Lawrence Kasdan, one of the writers on Empire Strikes Back, is one of the writers on the script of The Force Awakens. That alone guarantees my admission. That alone. Lawrence Kasdan did not touch any of the prequel trilogy scripts. And you can tell. You can tell that. Lawrence Kasdan, if you don't know, go to IMDb, is one of the finest American screenwriters Hollywood's produced in quite some time. Watch his movies. Study his scripts. He knows how to write. There's a great book called The Making of The Empire Strikes Back. It's a coffee table book. Read the great changes that Lawrence Kasdan made to that movie. I mean, to that script. It's astounding. Trust me, you want Lawrence Kasdan and J.J. Abrams and whoever else to write that script. And it's going to be amazing. It's going to be fucking amazing.
It is.
Period.
It is. I mean, you can tell by the people that Disney is hiring to work on the shit that they're serious. Yep. They're like, okay, well, you know, let's do this fucking thing then. And, you know, and I'm tired of people pretending that J.J. Abrams can't write, that he can't direct. And there's this whole, you know, and I was going to mention this, and I didn't. I was going to mention this when you were talking about Flash and the Arrow, and I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I saved it from now. There has been, like, this kind of, like, shadow backlash against J.J. Abrams because of that last fucking Star Trek movie. And, you know, and we've talked about this a lot. You know, we've talked about this a lot, so I'm not going to, you know, really, really dive into it. But, you know, I don't like how people want to act like this motherfucker just rolled out of bed one morning.
Yep.
And they're like, hey, you want to direct Star Wars? Mr. Guy, you know, guy that has no track record, has no credits, who has never made a hit. It's like, man, J.J. Abrams has been writing and directing shit that people want to see for a long time. And this whole notion, you know, this kind of allegation that has been kind of put forth by, like, Star Trek fans, some Star Trek fans, I won't say all Star Trek fans, that, like, Star Trek in the Darkness was, like, the worst Star Trek movie of all time. But get the fuck out of here. No, it wasn't. Go away. And this whole thing that, like, he just, you know, he like, ruined. Wait a minute. Ruined? I thought he rescued fucking Star Trek from, you know, big screen obscurity, like, a few years ago. So now he rescued it from oblivion and then sent it back to oblivion in the course of one movie. It's like, no.
And that's not what happened at all. Right. It's like, exactly.
I can understand that there are, you know, I can understand that, you know, kind of hardcore Star Trek fans didn't appreciate the movie for whatever reason, and that's fine and that's valid. But to pretend like, you know, now he's not supposed to work anymore, or now, like, he's never gonna do something else good because Into Darkness has exposed him. It's like, no. Like, you sound stupid. Like, please shut the fuck up. It's like, this dude has been making hit whatever for a long, long, long time. And he loves Star Wars. And if you watch the Star Trek movies that he did, you can tell he really likes Star Wars. And I think that he's the perfect person to basically get them out of the gate, and then he can go on and do other things, or he can come back and do one of the later ones. But I think that he offers, you know, he has a name that means, you know, that means quality, that means box office. And he has, you know, a documented history with the franchise and with the characters, you know, that this dude loves Star Wars, and that this is going to be, if you think that if you think that he's not working on this harder than he's ever worked on anything in his life, you're a fool.
Right.
You don't know anything about anything. And this whole, like, oh, yeah, well, you know, the prequels that were written and directed and produced by an entire different, you know, fucking crew of people were bad, so I don't want to see these new ones. It's like, come on, man. That's just, that's, you know, nitpicky bullshit that is just about nothing. That is just about people just complaining and trying to hold on to, you know, hurt feelings. Like, you know, George Lucas hurt my feelings with the Star Trek prequels. And now, you know, now I don't want to. Come on, man. It's like you sound ridiculous. I mean, some people's fandom is just like completely out of control. And I mean, sometimes I think that I'm emotional about this stuff, and then I see and hear other people talking about it, and I'm like, man, I'm glad I'm not like that, you know? And nothing that happened in the Star Wars prequels is going to have anything to do with what comes next, other than the fact that, you know, it's established backstory that's probably not going to change.
Well, one of the things you got to understand, and I don't think that you're being too emotional. I think what it is you're reacting to the fact that a lot of people aren't really fans. And what I mean by that is that a real fan, at least in my opinion, I know I'll get a lot of heat because I say this a lot. I tend to believe that real fans don't jump on a bandwagon just because it's trendy. And right now, geek stuff is trendier than it's ever been in the history of ever. I mean, there was not a time in my lifetime, and I've been into this stuff since about 1980 or 81, up until about, I'd say, 2004, it wasn't cool to be into this shit. It wasn't cool to be a Star Wars or Star Trek fan. It definitely wasn't cool to be a fan of both. You know, it wasn't cool to be a fan of video games. It wasn't cool to be a fan of comic books or science fiction novels or fantasy. All this shit that everybody takes for granted now, a lot of people fought and got in fights, you know, or got beat up or harassed just because they enjoyed it and they didn't hide the fact that they were fans. Now that it's trendy, all these entitled jackasses are coming into the scene. And this has nothing to do with women. This has nothing to do with cosplayers. None of that stuff. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that entitled millennial attitude of, well, why isn't it doing it for me? Why isn't it, you know, fulfilling every little whim that I have? And if it doesn't fulfill those whims, I'm going to bitch and complain. You know, it's not even a reaction against Abrams. It's not even a reaction against Lucas, because most of these people don't know enough about it. They just like to bitch. Because anybody who understands the nature of the business, and the thing is, I get into these discussions on Facebook all the time where people start whining and complaining about some actor. Like, for example, Viola Davis was just announced, I believe, as to play Amanda Waller in the Suicide Squad film that's going to have Jared Leto and Will Smith and Margot Robbie. I think that's how you pronounce her name. Mm-hmm. And people are like, well, it should have been CCH Pounder. I'm like, no. It shouldn't be CCH Pounder, because right now CCH Pounder isn't a name. Viola Davis is kicking ass on How to Get Away with Murder.
She is what's hot right now.
Right.
Oh, they don't, and by the way, she's also a highly accomplished, highly skilled actor who is basically bringing a sense of legitimacy to this project that it didn't have last week.
Thank you. Thank you. And that's kind of my point. And once again, people who don't understand the business, they don't understand the nature of the game, all they want to do is bitch and complain. And I use myself as an example. I'm not going to talk about this subject without putting myself on the line. Me and you have talked about this, and I'll say this for people who may have never heard our podcast before. I used to be one of the world's biggest Transformers fans, mainly Generation 1. I've lost girlfriends and friendships based upon my love of Generation 1. I was one of the worst fanboys on the planet, and I was that way until I met one of the producers of Beast Wars back in Comic-Con of 1999, and I got all mad and I went up to him, and I told the story before, and I was like, why didn't you do this or that? And he just explained to me about how shit works behind the scenes with the toy companies and with Hasbro and with the production company of the animated series, and you just can't do what the fuck you want because there's a lot of people who have to be appeased. You have to also pass things through a board, an executive board. I didn't understand that shit. I just wanted to see Megatron and Optimus Prime the way I wanted to see them. You know, and then when I worked on the Thundercat show, I had to understand how powerful the toy companies were in animation production. And this is just something very small, you know, not a big deal, but it's just shit that opens your eyes to understanding how things operate and that you just can't get what the fuck you want every single time.
Right.
You know, there comes a point when it's like, okay, there are things I don't like about a lot of shows, but guess what? I don't have to watch them. If I go to a movie and it didn't do what I wanted to do, like, for example, the Avengers movie. Avengers 1 is a kick-ass film. There were things I didn't like about it, but guess what? So the fuck what? There's other shit I could go watch. There's hundreds of movies released a month. People don't realize this, but there's a lot of movies that are not publicized that are good that you don't see. You know, and I went. And so instead of me getting mad about the Avengers 2 trailer, what it showed or didn't show, I just, you know, read a book. You know, I did. I ordered a bunch of books from Amazon recently about space and, you know, shit by Carl Sagan and stuff from Stephen Hawking. You know, I have other shit. Like, if you are that angry about a movie or a TV show that's geek based or comic book or science fiction based, guess what? There's this wonderful thing called Amazon.com. There's also this wonderful thing called the public library. You could go there, get a book, or guess what? Write your own shit. You know? Why don't you write your own short stories in a universe that does exactly what you want to do, or make some fan fiction. You can go into your garage, shut the door, go into your basement, write your fan fiction, and read it 40,000 times and be happy. Otherwise, just please, if you're not going to have an informed opinion, shut the fuck up. Please. Like, please. Everybody does have a right to an opinion, but they should change that to people should have a right to a fucking informed opinion. You know, just because I believe the sun is really a man hiding behind a giant, you know, under behind a giant curtain in the sky, doesn't make it fucking so. You know, that's an opinion, but it's not an informed one.
It's like, and just because you believe something.
Right.
You know, you believe your life is in danger doesn't mean it's actually in danger.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think the geek community just needs a bit of a wake up call, because I don't know how to do it. You know,
take shit away.
Yeah. You know what? It's not going to happen because there's too much money in superhero stuff right now.
Right.
But if there was a simultaneous crash at Disney and Marvel Studios and at Warner Brothers, and everything got canceled, every show got pulled, then I think some of these people would be a little bit more understanding and more appreciative of what they have. It's like, I say this all the time, and I always refer back to the 80s. No matter how bad a science fiction movie was, we were just fucking happy to get one. Like, there were movies that came out during the 80s that were horrible that we went to see 5 and 6 times because it was the only science fiction we got. And we were happy. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to trash The Last Starfighter. I'm not going to trash The Dark Crystal. I'm not going to trash Labyrinth or Legend or The Beastmaster or any of that shit from back in the day. Some of it was good. Some of it not so much. But we were happy. Like, we used to find reasons to like it.
Right. That's what's missing from fandom today. Everybody always wants to find a reason to fucking hate something. It's like, find a reason to enjoy something. It makes your life better. It makes it more complete, more well-rounded, more enjoyable. I mean, to me, I'm looking at 2015 and the movies that are coming out, and I'm ready to pass out. I mean, there's
exactly.
Avengers 2. There's, yep. What else do we have? We have Star Wars, obviously. We have Avengers 2. There's a new Jurassic Park movie, which I thought I was done fucking with entirely until I saw the trailer. And I'm like, oh, I'm with that. Chris Pratt and Jurassic. Okay, I'll go see it. I mean, I think we're going to have the new James Bond, Spectre, is going to be out. I mean,
that looks insane. Oh, the new Terminator's coming out.
The new Terminator. Oh, I'm glad you said that.
Here's Mad Max?
Mad Max! There are so many amazing looking movies coming out next year.
You got Ant-Man?
Ant-Man's gonna come out, and Ant-Man is gonna surprise people. I don't know if it's gonna surprise people like Guardians did, but I think people that are kind of like have this idea in their head that like Ant-Man is going to be like a piece of shit and embarrassment. It's like, yeah, remember when y'all thought that about Guardians? It's like, it's not going to be like this kind of disposable piece of shit that everyone is kind of imagining in their heads that it's going to be. Right. Oh, and I'm glad you mentioned Terminator. Here's something else that I actually saw somebody say. Somebody actually said this in my
Here we
feed.
Go. Here
they
we go.
Said
Here
that,
we go.
That Terminator trailer came out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yeah, see, that's how you do a trailer. That trailer was so much better than the Force. It's like, dude, it's like, that fucking Terminator movie comes out in like 6 months. And Star Wars comes out in like 13 months. Like, just tell, please tell me that you did not just compare two different trailers for two different movies that are releasing 7 months apart and try to use the Terminator one yeah. as a reason to shit on The Force Awakens.
But you know
like,
what that's
tell
about?
Me you didn't just do that in public and sign your name to it.
I'll tell you what. You know what? You know what's really going on? Well, here's the other thing about that. The Terminator franchise has so much more to lose. If this next Terminator movie doesn't hit that shit out the park and down the block and about half a mile out the stadium, then we might not see any more Terminator movies ever again.
Right.
Like, Terminator Genesis has everything to lose.
Yep.
Everything. So the idea of anybody dumb enough to do that, obviously, again, they don't understand the business. I mean, I'm looking at 2015. You know, you've got not only the movies we've mentioned, we've also got, like, smaller stuff. We got the new Wachowski brother and sister movie, Jupiter Ascending.
Yep.
We got the latest movie in the Liam Neeson genre called Taken 3.
Yep.
You know, because Liam Neeson is a genre now. He's
yes,
not even
Liam active. Neeson's.
Yeah. You've got a Hot Tub Time Machine 2, which I'm looking forward to. I mean, there's a lot of funny stuff. There's a new Charlie Brown movie, the CGI one, that I think Pixar, I believe it's Pixar. I don't know. It might not be. But there's a new Charlie Brown movie coming
looks
out.
Like Pixar.
Right. I mean, you've got a new Tarantino Western coming out. You've got the Entourage movie. You've got Ted 2. You've got a bunch of Will Smith movies where he, like, thrillers. There's a movie called Focus that's coming out. I mean, there's this movie called Tomorrowland with George Clooney
yep.
from the director.
Yep. I'm really excited about that.
I mean, 2015 is going to be as good as 2012, you know, for genre cinema. And I guarantee people are going to bitch throughout the entire year. Like, we're going to have to make an anecdote version. Every time something big comes out, we got to be like, this is why it's good. And if it sucks, I'm going to say, hey, this wasn't that great. That's
right.
Okay. It's okay if it's
and
not
And that's
great.
Okay, because
you know?
There's something else coming out, like, in a couple of weeks. And
right.
I have all of these books, and I have all of this shit on Blu-ray, and
yeah.
I have Netflix. And, I mean, there are so many choices. It has never been easier to find good shit in your entertainment, period. It has never been easier. There has never been more access to so much quality material in the history of humanity. It has never been easier to get your hands on hundreds of books and fit them in a device that fits in your pocket.
There you go.
Or to stream hundreds and hundreds of hours of TV and movies that you didn't actually have to go somewhere, physically buy, and physically load into a machine. You know, in like 4 or 5 episode chunks. I mean, it has never been easier to find shit that you like. And sometimes you can't tell if you go on the internet. You can't tell that that's actually the reality. And I think it's a sad thing because, you know, I love Kindle and Netflix and Blu-ray and all of this cool shit that we have now that makes it so much easier to have greatness at your fingertips. And people just refuse it. And all they want to do is complain or nitpick about some shit or start stupid arguments with people about stuff that doesn't matter.
Mm. There you go. There you go. And that's everything, man.
That
I
should
mean,
be
I,
everything.
I mean, no, bro. I mean, you, I mean, bro, I mean, it's like, I understand that people can get disappointed with things. I understand that people have different points of view on things, and I respect that. But what I don't respect is just this constant sense of entitlement that has spilled over to every aspect of the modern world. You know, if you don't like, you know, the depiction of certain characters in the X-Men movies, I can understand that. But after 15 years still bitching about the fact that Halle Berry is Storm, I'm like, yo, like, let that shit go. Like, I can't get through a thread about anything X-Men related without somebody pointing out the fact that they don't like, you know, Halle Berry is Storm. I'm like, okay, we get it. You don't like it. They cast her fucking 15 years ago. All right, it's over. You know, they're not going to change it. Move on. If you don't like a black Stormtrooper, don't watch it.
Right.
You know, if you don't,
you be the one fucking person in the world on Earth
that's not going to be there.
You know, hey, you know what? If you know, you don't like brothers, you don't want to see black people, or you don't want to see women, or you don't want to see Hispanics in your Star Wars movies, and this is just some social justice warrior bullshit. It's like, okay, well, you know what? Stand up for what the fuck you believe in and don't go see it while everybody else around you sees it and is trying to talk to you about it. It's like, oh, wait, shit, I forgot. You the dude that don't like brothers, right? Okay, I'm going to go find somebody else and talk
exactly
to you about it.
Exactly. And what I was going to say to you was that, if possible, I want to... Are you going to Star Wars Celebration? It's in Anaheim, man. Man, you got to... It's only 40 minutes away from you, man.
Know.
Come on. You got to go to Star Wars Celebration, bro. Tickets are still available.
I know. Maybe.
Oh, man, you got to come, bro. And at the very least, you got to come up here to watch Star Wars with me and the gang.
Oh, man. We going to do it. We going to get it done. That will happen. Now,
okay.
The celebration thing, I don't know about. That other shit, that shit's going to happen.
Okay.
So that's, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what. We already know we're going to go to the Dome Theater, the Arclight Dome over in Hollywood on Sunset Boulevard. We already know this.
Okay, good. Yeah, because what it is that my wife is not going to do the midnight show with me.
Okay.
For a variety of reasons. So I'll take her to go see it at another point, you know, when it's a little more calmed down. But, you know, that I'm going to have to get my midnight showing cap back on that I haven't used in like 10 years.
Bro,
and,
yeah, it's going to be wild. And because you know L.A. does shit deep. You know, the two cities you want to be in for Star Wars is either New York or L.A. You know, so it's going to be on. You know,
I can't wait.
Know, the minute the lights go down, the theater, the roof is going to blow off.
Man,
that.
Listen, if I can get through the movie. Okay, and I said this on Facebook a couple of weeks ago, and then it got confirmed. They're going to put, like, the first real trailer for The Force Awakens is going to be in front of Avengers 2. And I'm like, man, I'm going to pass out. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to do all of that in, like, a three-hour sitting. I may need, like, breaks or something.
I'll tell you a story real quick, and then we can probably kill this. Back in 1999, when the Matrix came out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the Matrix came out in March of 1999, and Star Wars came out in May.
Uh-huh.
And I went to a crowded, sold out theater, one of the largest screens in Boston, which no longer exists. It was called the Sherry Theater in downtown Boston. Now, me and my friends, it must have been like 20 of us going to see the Matrix that evening. I think it was a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And the trailer for The Phantom Menace, now, of course, this is before we realized it was going to be a steaming pile of shit.
Right.
The trailer was awesome, which is what I always say. I'd rather have a quote-unquote shitty teaser and a great movie than a kick-ass trailer and a shitty movie.
Right.
You know, so anyway, I tell you, when the Lucasfilm logo popped up on that trailer in the Matrix, I swear to God, I saw a black dude get up on top of the chair, leap up in the air to the point where his body blacked out the screen, and landed back in his seat. I swear to God this happened. I have people to prove this who were with me that night. And this black dude, because, I mean, you could tell he was a brother because no one else looked like, you could see his hair from even in the darkness.
Right.
He literally leaped up, and it reminded me of the shot from E.T., when they rode in front of the moon,
uh-huh.
You know, it reminded me of that
because he
actually got that high in the air. I think he actually used the seat to propel himself up in the air, and I'll never forget that day. And I might be that dude when the Avengers 2 come, when the Avengers 2 trailer, when the Star Wars trailer shows in front of Avengers 2, that'll be me.
Oh, man,
you will see.
I can't even
a 300 pound.
Just imagining it right now makes me excited.
And I don't know where the optimism went. Like, why isn't everybody like this?
I don't.
You know, I don't understand. And you don't have to be like me or think like me, but this is a great time. And we say this a lot. This is a great motherfucking time for genre fans. I mean, yes. This is literally the greatest time in history.
This ever. Is an historic ever. Moment in the history of geek
genre of genre fandom. We have never had it so good. We have literally never had it so good. And I think more people should realize that. And that's all I have to say.
Yep. All right. Cosign.
There you go.
So everybody would like to wish you a happy holiday. And thank you for listening to us at all. I don't know how many installments we had. Not as many as we should have, but that's my fault. We'll fix that next year.
Absolutely.
Hopefully in the next couple of months, crossing my fingers, there will be an announcement that will kind of explain why there haven't been as many, and everyone will understand and it'll make sense. But thank you for riding with the two Brandons.
Yeah.
Every whenever. And thank you for indulging us. And we hope you have a glorious holiday. And we hope that 2015 gets out to an excellent start for everyone. And we'll see you next year.
Yeah, and I want to say Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Saturnalia, and all the other pagan holidays out there. And you know, but seriously, this has been a great year for a lot of us. You know, as particularly as creators of color in the comic book and science fiction world, we've made a lot of significant steps forward.
Yes,
it's been tough. There's been a lot of people. There's a lot of resistance, but there's always a lot of resistance when you're trying to correct history. And you know, Brandon Thomas, guys like Jeffrey Thorne, Joe Illich, Kevin Grievous, myself.
Jason Reeves.
Jason Reeves, Afua Richardson.
Alvern Ball.
Enrique Carrion, people like N.K. Jemisin, Nnedi Okorafor, John Jennings.
John Jennings. Oh, my God. I love John Jennings.
David Walker.
Congratulations. Shaft number one. It is awesome.
That book kicked so much ass.
Oh, I was so jealous. I was like, man, this script is like paced perfect. Fucking perfectly.
Yeah. I want to also give shouts out to Tony Perrier and Erica Alexander for Concrete Park. Fantastic comic.
Go get it.
And there's so many people who I'm probably forgetting right now. I can't remember off the top of my head. Quinn McGowan.
Hannibal.
The Hannibal Taboo. Don't the guys over Hannibal. at Lion Forge. You got David Stewart II, Carl Reed, Ike Reed, you know, David Gordon, you know, Shannon Denton, my editor. My Andre the Giant book will be coming out in the middle of 2015, the way. Jonathan London. I mean, there's so many. Joel Selner, who does the My Little Pony books and the Saved by the Bell books and some other stuff she's got coming out. Charlotte Fullerton, Matt Wayne, so many folks I just wanted to throw out there who have made. LaShawn Thomas, congratulations on your stuff.
LaShawn, you know, I can't wait. We're doing that show together in San Francisco on the weekend.
I know. I might be showing my documentary up there.
Awesome. That will be great.
We'll see what happens.
That would be great.
I just wanted to give a shout out to and anybody I've forgotten off the top of my head. I'm so sorry because there's so many people who have made my 2014. Anthony Montgomery as well, brother. You know, I co-wrote his graphic novel Miles Away. So many of you out there made my 2014, excuse me, worth living. I met some really great people. We did EagleCon over at Cal State LA. Shout out to Rhonda Williams and Patrick Sharp. Shout out to Robert Roach, to Andre Owens. And the list goes on and on. You know, but I just want to say thanks so much for helping me this year. A lot of you came through for me this year. A lot of you have, given me a lot of respect, a lot of encouragement when I needed it, because I did have a tough second half of 2014, as many of you who are close to me know. Mm-hmm. So once again, God bless you all. God bless all of you. And everybody keep reaching for your dreams. And don't ever stop, no matter what anybody says or does. There are a lot of people who are going to stand, particularly creators of color, particularly women creators, period. People are going to try to stop you. Fuck them. Keep creating. And let's make 2015 a year to remember.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Last thing I want to say, It's a quote from one of my favorite TV shows created by Joss Whedon. I have a poster of this up in the living room of my house. I have this giant poster of the, you know, of the Firefly and this quote. And I just love it. It's this quote, "You can't take the sky from me." And that's just the kind of thing that I try to live by, and I always try to keep in mind when things are hard, when the struggle gets real, and when it doesn't seem like there's going to be an end to it. Keep pushing, keep dreaming, and don't let anybody take the sky from you. So that's the two Brandons signing out for 2014, and we will see y'all next year. Thank you again for the love and the support and the encouragement. And that's it. That's all we got.
Peace.
All right.